Welcome back, everybody. This is the Anti-Diet Club podcast, a show about intuitive eating, body liberation, and opting out of diet culture. I'm Gillian Wilson, an anti-diet coach, yoga teacher, and therapist in training, and I get to host this little podcast alongside my longtime friend, Tamsin Broster, who is also an intuitive eating and body image coach. This week, we have something a little different for you. Since Tamsin and I are taking a little late summer break, we're revisiting the top three episodes of the Anti-Diet Club podcast. We've been going for almost 2 years now. We've racked up thousands and thousands of downloads, and it's so interesting to look at what the most popular topics have been. So, kind of in a Top of the Pops type way, we're going to be counting down from three through to one over the next few weeks. So here we are, coming in at number three. This is episode 9, which we first released on the 13th of January last year, 2022. It was our first episode of the second season and the first episode into 2022. The title is If Not Dieting, Then What? This is such a great episode. We dive into health at every size. We dive into what even is health. What has the wellness industry become? We cover, since it's a January episode, things like resolutions and intentions and goals through the lens of holistic health rather than this kind of performative, privileged, capitalist version of wellness that we see now. And we finish up with a round of myth busting. I hope you find this as interesting as I did when I revisited this and re-listened to it. I think it's all still super current, and it's one of your most listened to episodes. So enjoy. So before we head over to the main event, we have seen a lot of new people discovering the podcast recently. So here's a wee reminder from your hosts of who we are and what we do.
Hi, I'm Tamsin. I'm based in Bristol. I'm a body image coach and I help folks navigate body image and food challenges, specifically when we hit those menopause years and we find it starts to affect our relationships and our careers and all other aspects of our life and stops us doing things. I run one-to-one coaching sessions and some group sessions. And if you want to get my audio food freedom masterclass, that is available all the time from my website. And my website and all details of how to work with me and connect with me are in the show notes.
Hi, I'm Gillian. I'm an anti-diet coach, yoga teacher, and therapist in training. I'm based in Edinburgh in Scotland, but I work with people all across the world who are looking to transform the relationship that they have with food and their body. I have a couple of openings coming up soon. So if this feels interesting to you, if you think I might be a good person to help support you through this transition from chronic dieting to living an anti-diet, peaceful life, then hit up the show notes, find my details there, and set up a call with me. I would love to chat to you. So now we've done our housekeeping, we can head on over to the show. All right, welcome back to season 2. Thanks so much for being here. Happy New Year to all you guys. I hope you had a great time over the holidays, however that looked for you during these rather weird times. And hi, Tamsin. So nice to see your face here again. We're on Zoom, by the way, so I can see her face.
Yeah, happy New Year. I feel like I'm saying that to the listeners, not as much you, because we don't really stop talking to each other, do we?
Yeah.
But yeah, happy New Year. It's so good to be back. I'm so excited. Season 2, Gillian.
Can you believe it? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's awesome. How was your holidays?
Yeah, good. Yeah, really nice, thanks. Yeah, lots of downtime, lots of family time, lots of reading. I've done lots of reading. I have to share that I am reading The Joy of Being Selfish by Michelle Ellman.
Yeah, I saw literally that you got that in
that book in your life, honestly.
That's so great. She'd be great.
I'm not being paid for that. I just really love that book.
Well, I can't
stop telling people about it.
Maybe we can have her on the show one day.
Oh,
she'd
my
be a
gosh,
great
I would
guest,
love that.
She?
Yeah, she'd be a great guest. Yeah, I've been following her for a while. But anyway, I digress. Sorry. Lots of reading.
No, it's great.
Lots of downtime. Yeah, just lots of family time and time with the kids. And yeah, how about you?
The opposite. I had like a false positive lateral flow test a few days before Christmas. So Christmas got cancelled at my end, pretty much. But you know what? It was nice. I have a really hard time relaxing. So that really made me like, I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything. I had to just be at home because I didn't get the results of my PCR until like many days after Christmas.
Yeah.
So I was like in 6 days in isolation for like completely unnecessary because I had no symptoms. But it was really nice. It made me slow down. So it wasn't the Christmas that we had planned or intended, but nonetheless, it was good. So yeah,
forced rest. I feel like that wasn't a bad thing. That's the universe giving you a sign that it's not COVID, but you need to rest anyway.
I think it was, and it worked out really well.
Yeah,
but really excited to be back. And our episode this week is called "If Not Dieting, Then What?" So I think we've said in previous episodes, right, that our work as coaches is very much aligned to health at every size. And we haven't really ever kind of dived deeper into what that is. What does it mean? And I think today is probably a good opportunity to do that. So with that said, how would you, Tamsin, explain to someone what health at every size is?
Yeah, great question. And I think it's really good that we're covering this today. Health at every size for me is, you know, understanding that you cannot just, you know, to simplify it, understand you cannot just look at somebody and know whether they are healthy. And also taking into consideration that what is health? Health is a spectrum. It's not something that is just so black and white. It's very much, you know, more, there's much more to it than that. It is about untangling that kind of link between weight loss and being thin with being healthy, and, you know, understanding that people can, like, body diversity exists for a start, and that you cannot just say that someone is unhealthy by looking at them and seeing how they look externally. There's so much more to it than that.
Yeah. And you've kind of hit on, so like similar to intuitive eating, how there's 10 principles of intuitive eating. Similarly with health at every size, there's like 5 principles of health at every size. And the one that you absolutely just hit the nail on the head there is about weight inclusivity, right? This real realization and respect for the fact that body diversity exists, weight diversity exists within the human population. We're not all meant to look the same. And the fact that we can, in fact, pursue health in a way that's most meaningful to us, regardless of body size, right? So I think we have been led to believe that if we want to pursue health, that it is the outcome, therefore, must be weight loss, right? And somebody said to me recently, which I absolutely loved, that weight loss is not a behavior, it's an outcome, right? And I would say, if you were to ask me what the kind of big overriding principle of health at every size is the fact that it is a weight inclusive model of care that is based around behaviors, right? Whereas weight loss is a weight centric paradigm that is geared towards this outcome of weight loss and doesn't necessarily include healthful behaviors all the time. Sometimes it does, right? I think we've said before on previous episodes, when people embark on a weight loss journey, they suddenly prioritize themselves in terms of like maybe shopping for more healthful foods, cooking more, maybe drinking more water, prioritizing movement. There can be some really good stuff in there, but all of those are behaviors, right?
Yeah.
And what happens is if the outcome that folks are looking for, weight loss, doesn't happen or doesn't sustain, the behavior stop.
Yeah.
And that's where I think this weight-centric paradigm really falls down, that if the outcome isn't achieved, the kind of outcome of like reduced fat on the body, the behavior stop, whereas actually a lot of health markers we can't see.
Yeah, it's because, you know, the weight side of things is probably the only thing we can measure, unless mm-hmm. we're going to get our bloods done all the time, or unless we're measuring it in some other way. That is the external measure that people kind of judge themselves against. And it's the one that gets the validation, you know, mm-hmm. in society, in our, you know, thin, obsessed culture. When someone loses weight, people will be congratulating them. No matter what, they're not actually asking how are you, you know, they might be asking how you're doing that, but they're not really gonna go into like what behaviors, they're not looking at whether those behaviors are actually supporting someone's physical well-being, mental well-being. We're not, you know, people aren't looking at that. They're literally looking at the numbers and how somebody's body is changing. And like you said, there's so many healthful behaviors that actually are behaviors that can support our pursuit of health that have nothing to do with, you know, you could keep going with, you know, adding in fruits and vegetables, drinking more water. If you have that privilege to be able to do so, definitely all those things, and prioritizing yourself, taking time for movement and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're right. It does. It quite often stops when the outcome that we're looking for, which seems to be weight loss, is when that goes, when that's, or that stagnates, or that stops, we think it stops working, or when our body says, no, thank you, this is too restrictive. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I loved what you said there about how, you know, people congratulate and people ask, like, what is it you're doing, or they're generally interested in like, what are you doing? Cause I want to do the same, but it's generally like, what's the protocol? What's the plan? There's very rarely questions of like, how are you feeling? Like,
yeah, like, how are you sleeping?
Yeah, exactly.
How are, like, your relationships? You know, things like this is the things that I never really experienced people asking, which kind of, you know, red flagged me. Like, how's your family life? Well, if, you know, going back to my dieting days, if I was, if somebody had asked me that question and I had answered it honestly, it would be, I'm not eating with my kids. I'm not eating with my family. And if I am, I'm modifying my meals to look very different. And I am eating in the dark in a cupboard at about 11 o'clock at night before my husband can see me, when he can't see me. Yeah. You know, if somebody had asked me that question, how are you sleeping? Well, not great, because I'm on an app all night clocking what I ate and worrying about how I'm going to burn things off. And, you know, how are you sleeping? Not great, because I'm getting up super, super early to try and fit in this and this before the kids wake up. So if we're, you know, like you say, kind of quite often some of these healthful behaviors come with not so healthful ones, some that don't support our physical and mental well-being.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what we talk about when we say holistic health, right? And I kind of, my viewpoint on this has really shifted over time, because my nutrition coaching qualification was through an institution that very much promoted themselves as holistic health, right? Holistic health. And I look at it now and think that was not holistic health. That was 21st century wellness culture, right? Which was all about green juices, chia seeds, very much geared at, like, I heard someone say recently, 21st century wellness is for people who are well, right? Yeah. And totally. I would add on to that and say it's actually for people who are like affluent and well, right? It's a hobby, it's a lifestyle, it's a status symbol, it's a performance. Whereas what I really understand now that I'm more educated around HAES, is holistic health is actually not just physical health, it's mental health, it's emotional health, it's social health. Mm. That is true holistic health. And actually what Health at Every Size does is look at how we can use this model of care individually, right, for our own individual pursuit of health, which is largely what you and I help folks do. But the other part of it that I really love as well is that it is an approach to policy making and social justice as well, right? So you and I can spend the rest of our lives helping individuals try to accept their body and heal the relationship with food. But there's this whole other part of it as well, whereby if there aren't folks out there being activists trying to dismantle the oppressive systems that make us feel so shit about ourselves in the first place, and in the fact that we have to buy into a weight-centric paradigm of health in the first place, then we're kind of like fighting a losing battle in many ways. It becomes very individualistic, right? As opposed to how do we change structures for the greater well-being and health of our communities and culture at large. So that's what I love about Health at Every Size. It's an individual approach, but it's also a collective approach to a shift in culture and policy making and activism.
And it's about including everybody, like you say, isn't it? It's not just for, you know, people who have money. It's not for just people who are privileged. And it's actually, like you say, about changing systems for everyone. And change, you know, particularly like you say in healthcare, because that's where we see so much weight bias and weight centric health. And that really, really impacts people every day.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. So I'd mentioned the five principles of Health at Every Size. We've mentioned weight inclusivity so far already. The part that we work with folks around a lot is the principle eating for well-being, which you could argue is intuitive eating, right? Another principle is life-enhancing movement. So what you and I would call like joyful movement. That's another principle. The other one is health enhancement. So supporting health policies, like we've just said. And actually, so they talk about physical health, economic health, social health, spiritual health, emotional health. That's truly holistic health, right? And also the recognition that it is as far as what is possible within your means and as far as what's impossible within your like resources and capacity, right? So it really acknowledges economic status as well. And as you say, it's not just for the privileged and the affluent. And then respectful care. So acknowledging our biases and working to end like weight discrimination, weight stigma, and weight bias and that kind of thing. So it really, I see it as a really progressive way of looking at healthcare, a really inclusive way of looking at healthcare, and one that is sustainable, because this is an approach that no matter what size body you're in, if we are focusing on behaviors and trying as far as possible to let go of the outcome of weight loss, that for me makes it more sustainable, right? And we know we're going to get on, right, a little bit later in this episode about dismantling some of the myths around it. But I've probably said this before, that when this outcome of weight loss doesn't happen, the behaviors stop. Whereas if we can take the idea of reaching a certain number or target off the table and really just focus on how these behaviors are making us feel day to day, and that being the focus, right? Because people in January like to have a focus. I like to have a focus. I know that January 1st is this like just this, it's just another day. It's just this like, it's kind of arbitrary, this whole idea of like, you know, a clean slate and a sort of new dawn. But I like the beginning of January as a time to like refocus as to how I want this next year to, you know, where I want my focus to be. And I would say I'm a goal orientated person. I would say I'm someone that likes to sort of take that time to look at what my intentions are. And I just love the fact now that they can be, the options seem a lot broader now that weight loss is off the table.
Yeah, you can look at so many other things that actually have much more impact on your quality of life. You know, you can look at your, you know, business goals, your career goals. You can look at your relationships, you know, do you need to set boundaries? Do you need to take more rest? Do you need to, you know, you can still look at, you know, health, like you say, health goals, but they're just, it's detangling that health and weight loss. It's not the same thing. It opens up a world of possibility, and it feels less, I think when you take weight loss off the table, it just feels less, it just is less restrictive all around when you're not thinking about what are you cutting out, whatever can I not have, what can I not do, what do I need to do like tons more of that my body's not used to, like things like, you know, I used to do that, it's going to crazy kind of sign up for all sorts of challenges and this, that and the other, and you know, day three I'd be like, oh yeah, I my body can't do that. Mm-hmm. That's really hard, and you know, I used to blame my body. But again, I think this whole kind of having if you're a goal orientated person, because not everybody is, I like to have some, but it's just, it feels kind of more nourishing to what you need personally. It's a mm-hmm. it's more geared towards self-care and self and growth, like self-development really.
Yeah. And again, like as you say, if that is a focus of yours, and this whole, like, I just want to call out this whole like new year new you thing is complete bullshit. There's nothing wrong with us. Like, diet culture would tell us that, you know, new year is a time to like fix ourselves and you know, improve ourselves, particularly coming to the, you know, almost 2 year mark of a pandemic. We don't always need to be in a growth period. We don't always need to be in a self-improvement period. Sometimes we need to, as you say, rest or, mm-hmm. you know, bring into focus something that is going to be more nourishing for us. I was going to ask you what your, if you have any like goals, intentions, like what's your focus? Is health focus? Like what are you prioritizing, if anything, if you've chosen to do in the new year?
Yeah, I kind of look at it a different way. Good question. I do look at it a different, slightly different way. I will reflect on the last year. And what I do is think about the things that I want to leave behind and think about the things that I want to take with me to help me grow. And I will look at things like my business, what I want to do in terms of that. I may look at, you know, how much do I want to travel? You know, do I need to think about like, you know, doing more, like we obviously with COVID and everything, we have hardly been away at all. And, you know, is that a possibility for this year? I look at all the possibilities for the year ahead. Like, what can I do this year? What have I got to look forward to? What things are coming up? I'll, you know, look at other things like financial plans and stuff like that. I know, I mean, it sounds really boring, but I honestly think that in a non-diet January is, I don't get into that kind of January blues thing, because you know what, we were talking about like everybody starting all these diets in January and stuff. Quite a lot of the conversation around January for most people is thinking about, well, you know, December can be quite high cost, especially for people with kids or anyone really, because you know, Christmas is quite an indulgent time of year. People tend to spend on presents and stuff. I mean, it depends on, you know, people's financial situation, but quite often January is tight. You hear people sort of say, I'm going to have no spend January, or I'm not going to drink. And some of that behind that is to save money. And I think that's where it kind of shines a light on the fact that dieting is, and wellness, it goes back to that kind of privileged position, because it isn't cheap. It's a costly thing to embark on. Like, you know, doing these diets, you've got to buy all these special foods in, you're clearing out your cupboards. So you're potentially not, I mean, this year was the first year, not the first year, sorry, the second year, but the one of the first times that I've really made use of leftovers. Mm-hmm. Because previously in dieting years, I would have been like, well, I can't have any of that. Mm-hmm. I can't make anything nice out of that. And I can't make anything healthy out of that. And actually, you know, I'm not going to be allowed that. But being allowed to carry on using up things that were left over, like cheese, like cream, like all that kind of stuff, without thinking, well, no, all this has to go in the bin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you're making more of what you have. And I think people get squeezed into thinking, oh, no, everything's got to go. Get it all out the way. Get it all out the house. And then 2 days later, they're like, oh, I really could do with something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's an expensive time of year if you're in diet culture. You're right. Like the new foods, the weight loss membership subscriptions, the gym subscriptions, like it is an expensive time when people generally are at their most skint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. My focus for this year is jigsaws.
I love that.
I have discovered.
Anyone ever wonders if we script this? Like, literally, no, because I did not see that coming.
I have discovered jigsaws, and I think they're amazing. And I've spent many an hour over the holidays staring at a jigsaw. But for me, like, as I've alluded to many times on this podcast, I find it very hard to relax. I'm in front of screens a lot. Like, my whole job, teaching yoga, coaching, in all the different capacities, this podcast, we're on a screen, right? Everything is screen orientated. And I have found jigsaws to be very soothing and very comforting, in a great way to just be alone and be mindful. And I love it. I love it. And so my focus isn't just jigsaws, but it represents a bigger theme of finding ways to kind of downregulate my nervous system, right? Which yoga has always been, but that is also my job. So finding different ways to just rest and use my brain in a different way. And honestly, before I gave up dieting, I would never have seen a jigsaw as being a health promoting activity. I would have scoffed at it, because I'd be like, what, sitting on my backside looking at these shapes? Like, that wouldn't have been part of like my plan or my goal. But now it's like, I'm just feel really thankful that I can see things in a different way now, and truly look at health in terms of what it means for me individually. And I just know this is something that I really, really need. So yeah, Big up to jigsaws.
I love that. Well, you saw me just before we started recording, you saw me move. We have one. I was doing one with my daughter. It's like a 1,000-piece Disney one that she wanted to do, and she kind of lost interest in the first 10 minutes. And me and my husband were like, no, we're getting this done. Yeah. So he's put it on like this board, and I kind of dropped a few pieces before the call, so I'm gonna have to sort that out later. But yeah, it's really hard. It's really actually what I'm finding hard with these smaller jigsaws is my eyesight's not as good as it was. And I probably should dig out my glasses that I don't wear enough. But I think it's anything that makes your brain switch off. Like, for me, you know, even last night I was thinking, oh, I've got so much to do, and I thought, no, I need to just put all this away, whatever will be in the morning, and I just need to read a book and then go to sleep, and that's it. And I'm really strict about it, just get off my phone, replying to everything. I can reply to everything in the morning and I can deal with everything today.
Yeah, exactly. Like, different prioritizations, boundaries, which sounds like you were really putting boundaries in place there. Just looking at whatever health is to us through a different lens when you take weight loss off the table. And I think it would be a good time to move into what I hear as some of the kind of objections towards pursuing health in a way that doesn't focus on weight loss, right? Because, I mean, God, we hear them a lot, right? Anytime I'm on a call with a new client, like, of course, there's always going to be objections, because that's what's kind of kept you immersed in the weight loss paradigm for so long, right? And invested in diet culture for so long. So there's always going to be resistance. There's always going to be objections. And I think there's a lot of myths around health at every size. So do you want to go through some of them?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to throw some at you.
All right, go for it.
Okay. So quite often we hear the statement of it feels like giving up. It feels like giving up on myself and no longer pursuing what I thought was going to be like my best life, the best version of myself. So what do you bust that myth for us, Gillian?
Yeah, so one of the questions, I think I've maybe said this before on this podcast, but something a coach said to me that I'll never forget. She asked me to journal or meditate on the idea, what is the difference between giving up and letting go? And that's really stuck with me, because thinking about that changed a lot for me, because essentially it's kind of the same thing, but it's how we frame it and how we think about it. And there seems to be a lot of shame around this idea of giving up, right? Like, it's a failure, like, you couldn't do it, so like, you had to give up. I actually see it as quite empowering, right? I think, like, when you think of it through a business lens, right? So I was like in the corporate world for like 18 years before doing this work. And if we were embarking on some business strategy, and after a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, we had continual proof that it just wasn't working, it wasn't sustainable, we would absolutely give up and pivot and go in a different direction. That is a smart thing to do rather than continuing to do the same thing and expect a different outcome, right? Mm. But somehow when it comes to weight, by taking the decision of giving up, it's somehow really stigmatized and you feel like are made to feel really shameful. And people don't give up for their whole life, right? I mean, I've worked with women like well into their 60s and mm-hmm. they've been at this for decades. And it's even though they have all the proof in the world that it technically doesn't work for them. And what I mean by work is like sustainable weight loss long term without all the dreadful side effects of binge eating and, you know, mental health being compromised. So I reframe this idea of giving up as letting go. It feels more purposeful for me. It feels more empowered. It feels like I'm the one making the decision in my own best, for my own best interests, right? And as we've already said on this podcast, when you let go of something that hasn't been working for so long, it opens up all these other opportunities in ways that are maybe not profitable. And let's like come back to that. The reason, one of the reasons we are kept in this cycle of yo-yo dieting is because of how profitable diet culture is. So I actually see it as a really bold feminist move of reclaiming my life. And if people want to frame that as giving up, that's their choice. I frame it as letting go, and it's a really empowering choice for me. And I would also say as well that giving up dieting is an act of self-care. And the more that we can start to have self-compassion, and the more that we can be kinder towards ourselves, and the more that we can find some sense of acceptance, that is such an underestimated place, right?
Yeah.
There is so much power to be had when we are in a place of kindness and self-compassion and self-acceptance that doesn't call it giving up, but to me that's where the power lies. So to answer your question,
yeah, definitely. Just something I was thinking as you were talking there was about, you know, there's something kind of tied up in the, you know, you were talking about people kind of in their 60s still going through it. And, you know, yeah, what there is, and it's not, this isn't, you know, we're not saying that dieters are bad. What we're saying is that diet culture is the harmful part of this. You know, we don't blame dieters or people who pursue weight loss because we understand why you're pulled in. But I wanted to just kind of touch on the fact that quite often, even though there's evidence that it's not working, if you've been doing it for decades and decades and decades, and you're well into your 60s, you're still doing it. There's that, for me, there is the thing behind that is because there's so much reward in simply trying to mm-hmm. lose weight. Mm-hmm. There's so much wrapped up in our brains almost when we're in diet culture, we're very much, and I was, this was me, as long as I was trying, the fact that it wasn't working was still just my fault. Mm-hmm. But as long as I was trying, I was still thinking that I was pursuing health. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, it does make
sense. There's reward in that behavior.
I also think you can kind of feel morally good and correct about yourself so long as you're still pursuing, right?
Yeah.
Even though I would argue the pursuing is like on and off pursuing. It's like on the wagon, off the wagon. So it's not this permanent state. We can't be in this permanent, like mentally we probably can, but in terms of what our behaviors look like, I think it's, for me, was very chaotic, right? It was either like extreme on the wagon or extreme off the wagon. So that really, if you take a 10 steps back, doesn't really look like pursuing health, right? When it feels so chaotic like that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think there's we can there's a part of us that can feel good about the constant pursuit of it, because it sounds and feels so bloody scary to actually take that stand and draw that line in the sand and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because what then does that mean? Like, what's on the other side? That can feel really scary, because it's probably a place that, you know, a lot of us
haven't
been.
Yeah, when you don't have those kind of rules and rigid kind of fit, it feels like even when you're, like you say, off the wagon, you know how far away you are from those rules that you align to what is on the wagon. Does that make sense?
So
you know how, where and when you have to shift yourself back to that. And that feels safe. That feels like a safety zone. Whereas to have nothing to like pull those walls down feels really fucking scary. And it's, you are right, it's like an act of rebellion. And it's almost feels like, you know, you're constantly questioning, oh gosh, is this the right thing to do? Like, well, how do I know that I'm doing this quote unquote right?
Yeah.
And that's the scary part.
I think this is, sorry, I know you want to move on, but.
No, I was going to say, should do another.
But this is where I think what we do in helping support folks coming out of chronic dieting, right, and through diet recovery, I do think it's a place that feels, if you're doing it on your own, it can feel very scary and very, very uncertain, very unpredictable. All your biggest fears come to fruition, really, of like feeling like you're just going to be in this permanent place of off the wagon. And I say this a lot because, you know, this feels very meaningful to me, that if your only experience of not dieting is being off the wagon, that I absolutely understand why people want to jump back on the wagon, because it just feels like, oh, well, I'm just going to like eat all the food and like never move my body. And of course, that's going to be the rebellion to being on the wagon, right? If you have been like, you know, crushing it at the gym every day and like only eating vegetables for like a month, of course, when you fall off the wagon, your body's going to crave rest and it's going to crave all the foods that you didn't allow yourself to have. So if that's your only experience of not dieting, I can understand wholly why that feels scary. It feels like it's a slippery slope. It feels like giving up. And that is why people jump back on the wagon. But that place of being off the wagon, that's not my life. I don't live in this place of just being off the wagon all the time. I wouldn't want to be there ever either. That place sucks, right? People can't imagine that there is a way of living where you're not on the wagon or off the wagon. There is no fucking wagon. You are just living peacefully and having the freedom of there being no wagons. And I think to get to that place, I think it's a hard place to try to get to on your own. And I say get to, it's not a destination. It really is a state of being that it can be fluid and fluctuate, but it's a state that I inhabit more frequently than any other place nowadays. And I just think it's hard for folk to imagine. Does that make sense? Am I making
makes
sense?
Makes absolute sense. And it brings us nicely onto my next myth I want you to bust. So all I don't. Right.
I didn't realize I was going to be the one where the myths are being like,
oh, do you want to switch it around? Only because I wrote them out.
Go for it. Oh, yeah, go for it.
On you down. So the other one that we hear is, so I just get to eat whatever I want all the time and I can just eat pizza and call it healthy. That's another one.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like what I just said there. Even the way that your posture when you, because I know you were like imitating what like people say, but the way, the tone in which you said that was very much like I could hear the judgment in the way that you said it, right? And that is diet culture, like, what, I can just eat whatever I want whenever I want? And it's like,
yeah, like, don't you know me? I just eat donuts all the time when I'm left to my own devices. Well, that's the off the wagon part, isn't it? You know,
it
and
is.
And that's a good food, bad food quote. I'm doing quotes because I forget that no one can see us. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's still having this kind of like all or nothing thinking and viewing certain foods as, you know, not having that neutrality around foods. And that is something that you have, you know, in this Health at Every Size intuitive eating kind of framework, you have to work through. For people who are listening who haven't really explored this or intuitive eating, there is a part of it, and that can go on for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, as you kind of, but it's the key part in recovery or getting to a place of neutrality is pushing through that and allowing that to happen and not pulling back when you it feels really scary.
It does feel really scary, like the as I say, the tone and the posture that we both had when we were kind of saying that, oh, I just like get to eat all the foods. It's like that really speaks to the judgment that we have around that and the fear that we have around that and the absolute mistrust that we have in ourselves, right? I think this idea of trusting ourselves, and I've worked with a lot of folks that once they realize that like this is a mistrust issue that I have here, right? Yeah. And if you mistrust yourself around food, you bet your bottom dollar there's going to be a whole lot of other places in your life that you mistrust yourself as well, because I don't think any of this stuff lives in isolation, right?
No, so definitely.
If you don't trust yourself, and with intuitive eating we talk about you know, our intuition, what you know, bringing our body into the conversation as to what we actually feel physically in our body, and make decisions from that place as opposed to what diet culture would tell us is good and bad, and the right, quote unquote, right and correct decisions to make. If you can tap into that place and make decisions from there with food, you can also start to tap into that place and make decisions with everything else, in relationships, in career, in what your idea of pursuing health is. It goes on and it goes on and it goes on. This is why it's so fucking empowering, this work, right? Because we're actually rebuilding that relationship with ourselves, and building confidence from within. And I've totally gone off track, haven't I?
No, it's fine. No, I agree. I think, you know, it does. I always sort of say, once you start, you know, and I know we're talking at health at every size, but, you know, intuitive eating is part of that. I think when you start being more intuitive about what you want, you know, in terms of food and how you want to, what your needs are, it spills over. It's like, it's like domino effect. You just can't stop it. And it's amazing, but it can feel very scary. Oh, what, you know, wait, I don't actually like my job all that much because, you know, or I don't like that person in my life that much, or I don't like that behavior that much. You know, you suddenly start looking at other things, and then you have no other place other than to really kind of either deal with it, manage it, or, you know, you can't turn it off. And, you can no longer stick dieting in front of it like a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know,
That's what we talk about. Dieting is a coping mechanism. Yeah. It takes the focus away. And maybe that's why January is such a popular time for dieting, because it's also a really popular time for divorce, right? Mm. Like I feel like it's we're faced with another year, and we're faced with like, okay, I'm into this new year. What lies ahead? And often, if, as you say, there's things like, well, I really hate my job, or I really don't want to be in this partnership or marriage anymore, dieting is a great way to put all your focus on and put all your energy into, because it's the biggest distraction and it's the biggest coping mechanism. And I think we think that if we can get that right, everything else in our life is going to fall into place, but it doesn't. It just, it just distracts us from the real issues at hand, right?
Yeah.
But to get back to what the myth that you posed there about, like, oh, I'm just going to eat all the food and eat pizza all day long. Like, yeah, that is a fear that people think happen. It happens maybe for a while, as you say. Like if you've been restricting particularly those kind of foods like pizza or whatever for a while, then yeah, you are going to eat a lot of pizza in the beginning. Like, that's natural, right? Like, of course, but it does start to find a relaxation after a while. But it's really hard for people to believe that. That's why there's so much judgment in like this idea that we don't have the ability to self-regulate, is what I want to call it, right? That we have to be making all these decisions from our brain and having all this ring fencing and all these rules around foods in order to stop us eating them. But actually, there's a different way, and that way is allow them in, and it's gonna just it's just going to find its way, and it's never the way that you think it's going to be.
Yeah, eventually they just become food and it's not as exciting and you don't sort of feel like you'll never stop.
Yeah.
Let's bust one more, shall we? Because yeah, in the interest of time, I'm thinking maybe one more might fit in.
Yeah.
So a statement that we may hear in this sort of work is, surely you're not saying it's healthy to be fat.
Yeah, good one. Good one.
That's a common one, I think.
Yeah.
I hear that in, like, you know, when I explain what I do for a living and people are like, well, surely you're not saying it's okay to be like in a large body, you know.
So what would you say to that?
That I'm not saying that anyone is healthy. What I'm saying is you can't tell just by looking at someone or judging them when you see them eat something or because they have a health condition, because, you know, first of all, you can't tell that a thin person is healthy either, or anyone, you know, on any spectrum of size is healthy. You can't tell that by looking at them. And secondly, you know, health conditions and things that happen to us are not only things that exist for people in larger bodies. They happen to everyone. I always use my husband as a very, you know, big example. We always tie diabetes to people in larger bodies. And my husband is type 2 diabetic and is not, he's straight sized, you know, and he has a condition that he just has because he does. Mm-hmm. For, you know, for genetics, there's, you know, all sorts of factors in there. And you couldn't pinpoint it down to one thing. And the, you know, interesting thing about that is people don't try. And the people often say to me, this is bugs me a lot. People go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize. Like, but he's, and then on follows the fat phobic statement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is what bothers me about it. And this is why this Health Every Size work is so important. Because we do make these judgments around people and their mm-hmm. health conditions based on size.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
If the answer, I don't know if I answered my own question.
It does. I mean, if the question is it possible for somebody to be like metabolically healthy in a larger body? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is it possible for somebody to be metabolically unhealthy in a smaller body? Absolutely. We are detaching this idea that health only exists in small size people, right? Or yeah. average size people. What we're saying is that health can actually, I'm using this, like, what even is health? Like, that's
exactly
that's probably yeah. a whole other episode.
Yeah,
like, how are we defining health? And what Health Every Size is, it's health isn't just the absence of disease, right? Which I think we kind of reduce health down to just like the absence of disease. And it's absolutely not. There can be people who live with chronic health conditions that isn't their fault. It's likely genetic or a whole host of other issues, but can still live very healthful lives because what? They have a purpose in life that they get up for every morning and are really passionate about. They have really strong community and social circles. They enjoy joyful movement, right? There's like, what health is looks different for everybody. But diet culture minimizes it down to food and exercise and small bodies. And what we're saying about health in bigger bodies is that it absolutely can exist to the same degree that it can exist in people of any body size. But health is a privilege, right? And the reason that I think we are obsessed with this idea that if we shrink our bodies, it's somehow this guarantee of, you know, a long, healthy life. And that's not how it works. We need to do a whole episode on social determinants of health, right? Yeah. Which social determinants of health, to just summarize, really, when you look at that pie chart, shows how much actual influence we have on our health. And it is so much smaller than you think.
Yeah.
When I ask clients, draw a circle, let's look at a pie chart. What do you think influences our health? And it's generally a straight line down the middle, food on one side, exercise on the other, or some variation of that. And actually, when you look at what influences health, the picture is way more complex and our influence is really small. And then when you take away things like alcohol consumption, smoking, exercise, and look at the actual food component, we're probably into single digits in terms of a percentage. It's very much overestimated that what we eat is influences our health to the degree that we think it does. And I think that's largely to do with the rise of nutrition science, right? I think that probably we all know much more about food, and we minimize and reduce it down to like these tiny components, whereas actually it's part of a bigger thing. It's all completely connected, right? That's setting up a few more different episodes for us, right?
I do think we need to go into some of that stuff in more detail, like you say, not necessarily today, but I agree with everything you just said.
Awesome.
I do want to take it from here.
Well, I guess how I want to summarize is that if anyone is interested in exploring health at every size, you can go online and look at the Association for Size, Diversity and Health, so known as ASDAH, A-S-D-A-H. There's also an incredible book that was written by Lindo Bacon called Health at Every Size. Particularly if you're into like research and science and what the science says about like health and what makes a person healthy and what is health and what constitutes health and how can we pursue health through a weight neutral or weight inclusive lens, and loads more myth busting. That would be a really great read for anyone out there. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's good. I think it's good to have this conversation. It's our first episode back into season two, right?
And I really hope it'll just open people's eyes to like, okay, well, if I'm not dieting, what else, what might health look like for me, and how can it be pursued through this alternative approach?
Yeah, definitely. So come follow us, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and drop us some notes on what you think of the podcast and what you think of these episodes. We'd love to know your thoughts, and come find us on Instagram too.
All right, catch you next time.
Yeah, see you soon.